Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are back with another new UFC event going down this upcoming weekend, UFC Vegas 96. We are almost at the end of these Apex cards, but we do have a banger main event coming at you. Jared Cannonier takes on Kyle Barallo in the men's middleweight division. Super pumped for that. Going to be covering the entire card on today's episode as well. We'll be looking at some new UFC fights, recapping Dana White's Contender Series. I'm going to talk a bit about senior year, as it is my senior year in college. Maybe about some things I'm looking forward to, some things that, I don't know, just my thoughts on it. And also, we're going to be looking at your little surprise for today's episode, is some fantasy football changes that could be affected by coaches. That's right, there have been some coaching changes in the NFL, and we're going to look at what some of them may have when it comes to picking fantasy football players for the upcoming season. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about on today's episode, including, I'm going to just let y'all know right now, we are working on getting multiple guests in the near future. 3, 4, maybe 5. It's getting pretty crazy. We're working on our networking. We're just trying to be the best we can possibly be. That's what we're all about here on the Spreadshed Podcast, is growing, becoming better. And I actually can't wait to talk about some of the books I've been reading. You know, I got some other fun stuff coming at you. But as always, we kick off every episode looking at new UFC news, new UFC fights. And one big story before we talk about some actually official fights is that there are rumors circulating that Stipe Miocic may be injured and will not fight John Jones again this year. For the second straight year in a row, I don't know if this is actually going to happen, but it might. We might actually have another pullout from this fight. And if Stipe pulls out, there's no running John Jones. Tom Aspinall is coming for your ass, boy. He's coming. And don't get me wrong, I know John Jones is the greatest mixed martial artist probably in the history of the universe, but Tom Aspinall is just so red hot right now. It's just hard to deny him knocking a title shot. So we'll see what happens with that whole saga, but it is kind of interesting. That's going on. A little switch up that's taking place at UFC Edmonton, going down in Alberta, Canada on November 2nd. We had a little mix up as Derek Lewis was supposed to take on Alexander Romanov. Of course, Derek Lewis ranked number 11, Romanov ranked number 12. Instead, they'll be flip-flopping and fighting two guys that I thought were supposed to fight each other. Derek Lewis will take on the unranked, undefeated Renata Dienetz, who is 8-0 professionally, 2-0 in the UFC, in a heavyweight co-main event. As for Alexander Romanov, he will take on the number 15th ranked Rodrigo Nascimento, who was most recently knocked out by none other than Derek Lewis. I have no idea why they're switching. That honestly makes zero sense to me. But honestly, I favor Derek Lewis and I favor Alexander Romanov in both of those matchups. So, I guess they're both going to win instead of only one of them. Very odd if you ask me, but hey, good for both of them. Fun fight coming at you in UFC Paris, in Paris, France, September 28th, as Ludwig Klein, who is 6-2 in the UFC, will be taking on the 2-2 in the UFC, Nicholas Mota. Nicholas Mota picked up a big win over Tom Nolan earlier this year, but other than that, he's been knocked out pretty badly by Jim Miller and by, Manuel Torres so far in the UFC. As for Ludwig Klein, I figured he'd be on the verge of the rankings, on a little win streak now, getting some finishes in. I have no idea. I have no idea why he's fighting a bum. You know, I guess Nicholas Mota isn't necessarily a bum, but certainly the skill level, Ludwig Klein is much more skilled. Nicholas Mota, so we'll see. We'll see how he does, but I am intrigued to see that matchup. Going down at UFC Vegas 100 on November 9th, Mansoor Abdul-Malik will be making his UFC debut at a perfect 6-0 as he takes on Dusko Todorovic. Dusko Todorovic at one point was undefeated 12-0 and now sits at 12-4. Dusko will look to right all of his wrongs and pick up a win here, but no easy goings as he takes on the undefeated 6-0 Mansoor Abdul-Malik. All by finish. Some fun ranked women's matchups coming at you. Going down at UFC Tampa, Florida, on December 14th, which I assume is the final UFC event of the year. Amanda Ribas, the number 7th ranked woman strawweight, will take on the number 8th ranked Mackenzie Dern. Excited for this matchup. This one should be good. Amanda Ribas most recently lost to Rose Namajunas. Mackenzie Dern most recently, who did she fight last? I think she beat Lupi Godinez. That was her most recent fight. Should be an interesting matchup there. I would probably lean Mackenzie Dern. She's been much more interesting as of late. in comparison to Amanda Ribas. That's a fun one. But here's one I'm absolutely pumped for. Going down at UFC 309, Madison Square Garden, November 16th. Killer Karine Silva, number 10 ranked, 18-4, perfect 4-0 in the UFC. We'll take on the number 11th ranked Vivian Araújo. Karine Silva is a killer. Okay, she is a killer. So many finishes to her name. She's been so dominant. All of her wins in the UFC coming by finish. Excited to see this one. Vivian Araújo, I do not see you standing a chance. Vivian Araújo, 6-5 in the UFC, all by decision. It's been atrocious. Karine Silva, we ride with you. And the final new fight that has been announced. I'll see if they had any others, but no, only one more. Going down to UFC Macau in Macau, China on November 23rd. Carlos Hernandez, 9-4 professionally, will take on the debuting 8-0 Art of Knockout. Guys, his name, I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher it. Nyamjargal Tumendemberel. Hey, I don't know. He's undefeated, 8-0, won a championship in MGL, FC, and Gladiator, two lower-level MMA promotions. But hey, I'm excited for it. He looks kind of badass. He's got a skull tattooed with swords coming out of it on his chest. I'm here for it. We love stuff like that. That absolutely just lights me up, lights me on fire. Exciting stuff. So yeah, those are all the new official UFC fights that have been announced. In terms of other people looking to get fights in, Matheus Gamrot, fresh off his loss against Dan Hooker, says he wants a rematch Beneil Dariush. I think a Rafael Fiziev rematch would be much better. We'll have to see there. Other than that, not too much. There have been a couple of interesting things going on in the UFC realm, but I think we pretty much covered all of it. One of the main things that does go down now for the next 8 weeks following this week is Dana White's Contender Series. And we recently had the second episode of Season 8. Of course, Dana White's Contender Series. There's 5 to 6 fights. Every Tuesday, Dana White watches these fights. And if he's impressed, he gives them a contract. Now, this past Tuesday, we had 5 more fights and 4 contracts were given out today. So let's recap those fights and see who's going to be making an impact in the UFC. First off, kicking us off in the bantamweight division, Cody Haddon took on Billy Brand. Billy Brand, unfortunately, not getting the win here as Cody Haddon took quick work of him in this one. And Cody Haddon, impressive now, 7-1. Till this fight, it lasted 3 minutes and 9 seconds. Cody Haddon getting a round one rear naked chokehold. 27 significant strikes to 9, 40 total strikes to 14. I mean, Haddon just went ballistic. He dropped Brand, took him down 104 times, got a minute of control time. I mean, he absolutely swarmed Billy in dominant fashion. Billy Brand now 5-2 professionally. So Cody Haddon, welcome to the men's bantamweight division. You know, not too bad. 25 years old. Cannot complain there. And you know, exciting stuff. He'll be getting a probably a decent prospect in his debut, probably a medium level bantamweight at best. But yeah, this was a great way to kick it off. And of course, Dana White was giving this man a contract. Next up, okay, the only man to not get a contract on here, Torres Finney. All right, Torres Finney, undefeated 9-0, was on the last season of Dana White's Contender Series, season 7, the finale, and got a rear naked chokehold, okay, but in that fight, did not impress enough. He got round 2 rear naked chokehold, did not impress enough to get a contract. And for this one, he really needed to make a statement, and unfortunately, just didn't do that. You know, 32 significant strikes to 28 in favor of his opponent, Cam Rouston. Total strikes 80 to 50 in favor of Cam Rouston, but 10 of 14 on takedowns for 11 minutes and 41 seconds. Torres Finney grappled him to death, and Dana White just absolutely hates when fighters grapple to death. So that was pretty comical. Round 1, 4 minutes, 11 seconds control time. Round 2, 3 minutes, 29 seconds. And round 3, 4 minutes and 1 second. But all the judges had it 29-28, so Finney didn't even get a 3-round sweep. I mean, I don't know what to say here. Finney, you know, Dana White literally told you, okay, go out there and get some more, get 3 to 4 more fights under your belt. We'll talk about you again. It's unfortunate to see. I feel like he could maybe hang in the UFC, but I don't know. Cam Rouston, the battle giraffe, his nickname is, 6'2", 8-3 now. So you're not making it to the UFC. Unfortunate matchup here, kind of boring. All right. After that, bantamweight matchup again, and another person getting a contract, this time going the distance. Cortavious Romeo's 9-2 record returning to the Dana West Contender Series after being on last season, where he got TKO'd in 29 seconds. But the UFC saw something and was like, you know what, we'll have him back. And he impressed. He greatly impressed in this one, taking on Michael Emparato, who was 12-7 now, so much more witty veteran in his 30s. And Cortavious just did great in this one, right? Did great, won all three rounds. Almost knocked him out in round one, dropped him in round one. Round two, you know, 13-4 in terms of significant strikes, held the distance more. Michael kind of ended the fight a bit better, but Cortavious was still landing the harder shots. And you know what? He's going to the UFC. He's coming to the UFC. And honestly, Cortavious versus Cody Hatton, two guys on this card would make very well competitors for their debut. I don't know how far Cortavious will go in the UFC, if I'm being honest. You know, it's just my observation. But he was throwing up submission attempts. He was showing power in his hands. And we'll see how he does. All right, Cortavious, welcome to the UFC. Dana White was rocking with him. After that, very interesting one, all right, in the UFC heavyweight division, or I guess not the official UFC division, but in the heavyweight division, Rizvan Kuniev took on Hugo Silverback Kunha, and Rizvan Kuniev gets a knockout with 1 second left in round number one. Very impressive stuff. Rizvan, you know, he may be 30, 32 years old, but even Dana White was like, we always need more heavyweights. And he'd actually been on Dana White's Contender Series before back in Season 5, got a round 3 TKO, did not get a contract. Here he is, getting a contract here, knocking out Hugo Kanab, improving to 12-2. Hugo falling to 8-2 now, very unfortunate. But Rizvan, 6'4", 240. I mean, this is a big boy. And, I mean, you're going to look at the stats. 15 significant strikes of 3, okay? Hugo went 0-6 on takedown attempts, but Rizvan had him up in the clinch, hitting him with some knees to the body, dropping him, finally hit him with an elbow. Actually, no, the main event was knees. This one was a big elbow to the head, which dropped Hugo, and Rizvan capitalized. And immediately, right after getting his contract, calls out Ciryl Gane and Holm Almeida to a fight. I already love him. I can already tell he's going to be probably the bottom barrel of UFC heavyweights, but he was pretty interesting here. We'll see how he debuts. There is a plethora of unranked heavyweights for him to fight. Muhammad Usman, Chris Barnett, Carl Williams, Junior Tuffa, Justin Tuffa. You even have Marco Sergio de Lima. You got, there's just an unlimited pool of unranked heavyweights for this guy to fight. Welcome to the UFC, man. We'll take you. We'll take you. Main event, welterweight division. This was a fun one. Andreas Gustafsson with some crazy tattoos on this boy. I mean, oh my goodness. Andreas coming in definitely from Western Europe, I could assume, maybe even Eastern Europe. Taking on Pat Pytelik, and this was competitive. Right, this was as competitive as it gets. Pat Pytelik did lose this one, got TKO'd in round number two with knees, falling to 9-2 now. But Andreas Bane Gustafsson improves to 11-2 with a little knockout here. And this was, round one, Andreas, 2 of 3 on takedowns, right? 4 minutes, 32 seconds. It looked like it was going to be another grappling affair. Round two, realizes, hey, I can strike openly against this guy. Starts laying into him, landing some knees to the body, drops some follow-up punches. That was that. Andreas gets the contract. Even Dana White admitted, you know, he was sleeping on this fight. Sean Shelby was all gassed about it. Lo and behold, Andreas gets it done. So welcome to the UFC. We have another welterweight. Yet again, I don't know his ceiling. He did look impressive. Okay, I'll give you that. He looked very impressive in this, but, you know, it's hard to say. A lot of these Dana White's Contender Series guys, they haven't fared too well. You have your ones that, you know, Talia Santos challenges for a belt. Jamal Hill wins a belt. You have some of those guys like that. Then you have guys that go 0-3 in the UFC and just nothing amounts to anything. But, you know, Andreas, welcome to the welterweight division. You're going to do super well. I can feel. Rizvan, it's tough to tell. Heavyweight division, I'll rock with you. Cortavious, I don't really know if he's going to do well. We'll have to see. And Cody Hatton, I mean, impressive nonetheless. In 3 minutes and 9 seconds, he showed why he belongs. He showed the striking, grappling, submission ability, knockout ability. He had it all. So 4 out of 5 fights, get a contract. Torres Finney is left questioning, why did I grapple this guy to death the entire fight and never look for a finish? And that's kind of what Dana White said, is he felt that he had the finish multiple times and just didn't have that killer drive, killer aspect to get it done. And I think that is a big factor in why he didn't get a contract. So we wish you the best to all of these competitors. And who knows, maybe Torres Finney will be on a third time in the future. I don't know. It could easily happen. I could easily see that happening. He just needs to get finishes. Bring the finishing ability. That's what we look for. And I'll tell you what else we look for. And that is, we look forward to the future. All right, we look forward to all sorts of things. And as of right now, this upcoming Monday, August 26th, I believe is the correct date, I will be officially a senior in college. Of course, I go to Minnesota State Mankato in Mankato, Minnesota. And it's just absolutely wild that is already my senior year. I'm not necessarily sad about it. You know, I'm certainly much more aware of, you know, time just passes. You know, the days come and go, and it's all about the memories you make. That's pretty much how I view it. But this senior year, I am super excited. You know, I've got 8 months to maximize my time here in college, and I'm going to just use it to its absolute max. I'm excited to see a lot of people I haven't seen over the summer. I'm now the president of the marketing club. We're going to try and make marketing club great again. That's the motto, all right? Make marketing club great again. You know, like Dottie T, make America great again. No, make marketing club great again. I got some ideas for that. I think I'm meeting with the board next week, but it's exciting stuff, guys, all right? It's exciting times. And I honestly think I might write a book about how to survive college. I'm sure a lot of people have written, like, oh, tips to know about college, but I think it'd be fun to write a book about that, something for the future. You know, classes, I think this is something I've struggled with every year. I have to realize I'm in these classes to learn, not to pass the class, all right? You would retain much more if you were to fail a class and learn everything from it. So with my final 9 classes I'll be taking, I want to learn as much as I can so that I can go get a job and then use what I learned from college and my job to then start my own business, all right, and not have to work for anyone else. Be my own boss. That's what I'm all about, being my own boss, all right? And I'm happy I'm the president. You know, I'm happy I'm going to be managing people, if you will. But it's going to be kind of an emotional year, okay? And it's going to be emotional saying goodbye at the end to a lot of people I've met, saying goodbye to my house down here, the campus. You know, I'm going to have to move on, and I'm very aware of that. Some goals I have for the upcoming year, of course, all A's. All A's is always the goal. We'll take B's, never a C. We'll take B's, never a C. Make as many memories as I can, meet as many people as I can. My goal is to join at least 2 to 3 more clubs. All right, I'm only a marketing club right now, but I'm going to try and expand my circle. That's the whole goal. I might actually speak to the School of Journalism, or actually one of my buddies just recommended me to go on Fiverr. I'm trying to find a editor or videographer or something. Maybe not so much a videographer, but a editor. So I can film myself for the podcast and even film YouTube videos for my YouTube channel. And just kind of expand my personal brand, because, you know, a personal brand, so it's going to help you when you have your business. As I've seen that, you see it with Andy Elliott, you've seen it with the Tates, you've seen it with PBD, you see it with all these successful people, they have their own personal brand, right? And they use their name. And I feel like Zachary Ruger, you know, I really rock with my name. I'm very happy with my name. And learning how to manage that, I think, is very important. So We'll see what comes in the upcoming year. It's going to be certainly exciting. Me and my boys, I mean, just tearing it up every single day. Excitement, intrigue. I don't really know much more to say, but senior year looms, and I answer the call. You know, reading books, meeting people. I think just personal development is what I'm all about. But senior years are coming. I'll be turning 22. Very exciting stuff, if you ask me. I'm going to be trying finishing a book I've been writing for my girlfriend. I kind of took a break this summer. And I actually have to get some furniture for the new place. I actually have to try and trade a TV with some people I know. So there's a lot of miscellaneous stuff I have to work on. So wish me all the best of luck. I'll be giving updates throughout the whole year. And at this semester's end, we'll probably do another episode where I rank all my college classes. That was super fun. Great times ahead. And I'll tell you what else is great times ahead. And that is the fantasy football season. And we all love fantasy football. I mean, who doesn't love a little fantasy football? It's so much fun. And I was kind of thinking, you know, I already did one draft. I have freaking like 3 more in my future. What are some things you should be aware of when you're going to draft a team? and I was kind of perusing the internet when I was still in my internship, and I kind of realized, you know, coaching changes for the upcoming season, no one really thinks about that. So I found this beautiful article that I'm going to go through, and it is NFL coaching changes that will alter fantasy roles. I went through, checked it out, and here are some key takeaways, some key changes going on in the NFL, if you will, that'll impact who you should draft. So here are some big ones. You know, you've already heard that Jim Harbaugh's going to the Los Angeles Chargers. Kellen Moore is the new offensive coordinator for the Eagles. Cliff Kingsbury is the new offensive coordinator for Washington. But there are a lot more that you should be aware of that we're going to talk about. We're going to go through all of them. I believe there's freaking, I have like 15 or 16 here. So not every single team, but a good amount of them. And we're going to try and talk about their passing rate and running rate and how that's projected to change for the upcoming season. So without a doubt, let's dive right into it and try and help you all better pick fit players. Now that you know, the coaches are changing it up. So first off, the Cincinnati Bengals, they have a coaching change. They have a new offensive coordinator, Dan Pitcher. Okay, Dan Pitcher, he takes over for Brian Callahan, the only offensive coordinator to work alongside Joe Burrow to date. Pitcher, however, have served on Cincy's staff since 2016. He has held the QB's coach title since 2020. So this looks like a continuity play. Okay, you know, he's just moving up from QB coach to the offensive coordinator. Pitcher has excelled in his job of helping to develop our quarterbacks over the past 5 years, the head coach Zach Taylor said. And he's been a top contributor to our scheme. And that role will now increase. All right, and how does this impact fantasy? We're not forecasting major changes, the experts are saying here, as Taylor's expected to remain the play caller. Last year, the Bengals ranked second in passing rate over expected, despite missing time with Joe Burrow. So the passing rate was at 63.5% in 2023. It's oddly projected to go down to 62%, and run rate's supposed to go up. So I actually know if I'm going to use those rates. But my main takeaway is the passing game over the running game, now that you have the QB coach as now the offensive coordinator. So T. Higgins, if he stays, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, ride with your offensive players for the Bengals, more so on the wide receiver end. Moving on to the Cleveland Browns. There you have a coaching change. New offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey. And Ken Dorsey, you know, he's familiar. All right, you're going to see a familiar change here. Right? Dorsey, he left the Buffalo Bills, and he was actually fired after a 5-5 start. And it seemed like he was more of the fall guy for Josh Allen's turnovers. Josh Allen was having turnovers left, right, and center last year. The 43-year-old steered Buffalo to the following rankings through week 10, third in expected points added, second in rush EPA, eighth in dropback EPA, first in success rate. In 2022, Buffalo ranked second in points and yards. So the Browns QB turned offensive coordinator Dorsey will replace Alex Van Pelt, who held down the offensive coordinator role in Kevin Stefanski's first four seasons. We don't know if Dorsey or Stefanski will call plays, but according to reporter Mary Kay Cabot, Dorsey's fingerprints are all over the offense. The former Browns QB will run a very similar offense that Deshaun Watson ran in Houston under Bill O'Brien. So this offense figures to go as far as Watson will take it, especially, you know, Nick Chubb is out. He's rehabbing, and Deshaun Watson hasn't posted impacted fantasy numbers since 2020, and he's coming off an injury. So expect a similar offense. There's not much changes going on with the Cleveland Browns. Now, as for the Chargers, if you didn't know, Jim Harbaugh is the new head coach, and they have a new offensive coordinator, Greg Roman. And if we learned anything about Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, is he loves to run the ball. Expect the run rate to go from 39% to 44.2%, according to the statistics. From 2011 to 2014, Jim Harbaugh's 49ers ranked top 10 annually in rush attempts. Removing the pandemic-shortened 2020 season, Harbaugh's Michigan offense all averaged 37 carries per game, okay? And that's over a 9-season sample. You actually know a similar story for Roman, who served as Harbaugh's play caller in San Francisco, who's the new offensive coordinator. In Roman's 10 seasons as an offensive coordinator, his units have never dipped below 9th in rushing attempts. So you look to the Chargers, you got Gus Edwards, you got J.K. Robbins, you also have the rookie Kimani Verdi. You're expecting a run game with the Chargers, okay? And when we look at the wide receivers for Justin Herbert, they're not looking that pretty. I think you're going to see the running game stepping up a lot. I don't necessarily know who. You got two former Ravens in Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins, and you got a rookie, but ride with the running backs, guys. That's what I'm hearing. Another change going on, Las Vegas Raiders coaching change. Offensive coordinator Luke Getsy is coming in. And Getsy was underwhelming in Chicago. He spent most of the past 10 seasons as a QB coach or wide receiver coach in Green Bay until he officially earned the Bears offensive coordinator job in 2020 and held it until he was fired this past January. Justin Fields played a role in the offense, leading run pass rate over expected for two straight seasons. What in the world? So Justin Fields was the reason this offense was leaning into the run, but Getsy's game plans often lacked creativity and direction. Oh, then how does he have a job? The Bears ranked 24th in yards per play last season. Ugh, all right, but how does this impact your fantasy odds? Okay, here's the positive. Getsy meshes well with Antonio Pierce, the official head coach now of the Raiders. As you can see above, we have the Raiders leaning more toward the run. That puts Zamir White in a fine spot, provided he holds off backfield competition. This offseason, Davante Adams said Getsy will utilize the same verbiage, same playbook from Green Bay, where he actually played with him. Good news for Adams' transition, sure, but it's hard to feel confident about this passing game beyond Adams with a QB duo of Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. So, ride with Zamir White and Davante Adams. It's just like Justin Jefferson. No matter who's throwing to him, they're going to want to get the ball to him. Plus, they have the connection in Green Bay. I'd lean with Davante Adams and Zamir White. Moving on to a very interesting one, the New England Patriots, where it looks very bleak. New head coach Jared Mayo and new offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt. Expect to see a bit of an increase in the run rate. The Pats promoted from within, making Mayo their first head coach hire since 1999. That's right, Belichick had held down the fort for 25 years. Absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. The new offensive coordinator, Van Pelt, has had experience as an offensive coordinator and QB's coach in freaking six different cities. Although experience, Van Pelt doesn't bring a standout resume. You have to go back to 2010 Buccaneers to find a QB. He helped propel to a career year. Who was Josh Freeman? Very irrelevant. The Pats weren't happy to be pushing a 60% passing rate in 2023. That number is set to drop even more in Drake May's rookie year, even with some promising offseason additions of Jalen Polk and Javon Baker. But will Drake May even be under center come week one? A June piece in The Athletic suggests Jacoby Brissett will get the opening day nod. Who knows? Honestly, I haven't the dandiest clue, but it's a mystery. Drake May, Ramondre Stevenson, Antonio Gibson. It's all so unpredictable. So I'd probably steer clear of Patriots players. Maybe stash them on your bench, but don't draft them high. Here's a fun one for my buddy Seth, new offensive coordinator in Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Steelers, my good buddy Seth's favorite team, Arthur Smith, is expected to have the run rate increase by almost 3%. Before you hated Smith for his work in Atlanta, you were intrigued by his performance in Tennessee. So let's get reacquainted with that. Arthur Smith, you know, when he was with the Titans, he helped them be ranked 5th in yards per play in both 2019 and 2020, and they finished 8th in passing touchdowns in multiple years. Keep in mind, these offenses were piloted by Ryan Tannehill, and Smith coached the two best seasons out of the former Dolphins QB, including a 2019 season that turned up a massive 9 yards per pass attempt. In Atlanta, Smith never led Matt Ryan, Marcus Mariota, or Desmond Ridder to even average play. His passing offenses went 19th, 31st, and 25th. Instead, the focus stayed on rushing. In fact, Smith's tendencies closely match what we saw from Pittsburgh in 2023 under former offensive coordinator, the very bad Matt Canada. The Steelers led the league in situation neutral run rate. Don't even know what that means. Atlanta finished 2nd. Interesting. Steelers ranked 2nd in rush rate inside the 10-yard line. Atlanta finished 3rd overall. The Falcons ranked ahead of the Steelers. Okay, but how's this impact fantasy? Pittsburgh will probably remain a run-leading team. Okay, it's a win for the 1-2 punch of Najee Harris and Jalen Warren, who sit higher in the PPR rankings than they did last season. But the passing game doesn't hold much appeal beyond George Pickens and Pat Freiermuth. All right, Pickens supplies breakout potential amid a wide range of candidates. So George Pickens, potential breakout. Got Najee Harris, got Jalen Warren. I'd probably lean more into the run when it comes to Steelers. So take Najee, take Jalen Warren, but they have a split backfield. So it's kind of tricky. Kind of tricky with those split backfield. And the last AFC team that we have is the Tennessee Titans. They have a new head coach in Brian Callahan and a new offensive coordinator in Nick Foles. And with the addition of these two, expect a higher pass rate, projected to increase from 55.7 to 58.5. Brian Callahan will call plays for the first time in his career. His resume includes stops as an offensive assistant, QB's coach, and offensive coordinator. Been in the league almost 15 years. He's coached Peyton Manning, Joe Burrow, Matthew Stafford. And, you know, as for the offensive coordinator, Holtz, he was relatively unknown before landing this gig. He spent most of his career with the Raiders, surviving several head coach firings, and he also served as the University of Northern Las Vegas' offensive coordinator in 2022, and then Jacksonville's passing game coordinator in 2023. Wow. So, fantasy aspect, or the impact of this, Tennessee's offense looks solid on paper, but can Will Levis turn the flashes he showed last year into something more consistent? Learning another new offense after playing with two different offensive coordinators at Kentucky isn't ideal, but the 2024 Titans will feature a more modern offense that'll give Lewis a spot to emerge as a fantasy starter. So, a lot of new faces. Lewis has a lot of potential. Or Will Levis, I'm sorry, not Lewis. Will Levis has a lot of potential. And he's probably going to be a sleeper quarterback coming in the draft. But yet again, just so much unknown. There's just so much unknown. As for the Falcons, new head coach Raheem Morris and new offensive coordinator Zach Robinson has the passing rate projected to increase. Now, with this, the pass rate being higher, you still have to understand Bijan Robinson is super talented and will get a bunch of touches, okay? New offensive coordinator Zach Robinson is being called one of the most popular candidates for this hiring cycle. Robinson spent 4 years as a college QB and several more in the NFL. Since 2019, he held multiple roles under Rams head coach Sean McVay. The McVay connection is enough to get us excited. So, as for offensive coordinator Zach Robinson, hasn't called a play at the NFL level yet. We're considering him an upgrade in fantasy simply for the move to a 21st century offense. Our numbers have Atlanta's pass rate jumping by more than 5 percentage points. Plus, you got Kirk Cousins, and Drake London is probably going to have a breakout year with an absolute star-studded QB thrown to him. So, I don't know. There's a lot of different wide receivers going down in Atlanta. I think the passing rate is going to be going up with Kirk Cousins. So be careful when you draft Bijan Robinson. Just letting you know. He's talented. He was good last year. But they did not bring Kirk Cousins in to hand off the ball. Okay, they brought him in to throw the ball. Just letting you know. Here's an interesting one. The Carolina Panthers, new head coach and new offensive coordinator, Dave Canales and Brad Izick. Running rate projected to increase. Carolina fired head coach Frank Reich after 11 games on the job. Did they make the right move? Some people are wondering. I don't know, but running back Jonathan Brooks arrives on a 21-year-old rookie deal with only 238 collegiate carries. Yeah, that's carries. Mind you, what's his face? The Michigan team, they averaged 37 carries per game. That would have been about 5 games for Jonathan Brooks. Rehabbing from an ACL tear adds short-term uncertainty, but Carolina did well to bolster the offensive line with guards Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt. Brooks ultimately looks like a risk worth taking with a fantasy football projection of the 32nd running back in the league. Elsewhere, we're optimistic Canales can steer QB Bryce Young, closer to league average play, but will he rise to the level of a fantasy starter? Consider it a long shot. Yeah, Jonathan Brooks, probably the best play. You know, he's the rookie running back, but I don't know. There's not much promise in Carolina. Similar to the Patriots, I'd steer clear of this team, keep him on the bench, if anything. Here's a team that I'm going to need to be aware of, fellow NFC North rival, the Chicago Bears. They've made a coaching change. The offensive coordinator Shane Waldron is coming in, and he's expected to take the passing rate from 51.3% in 2023 to 59%, a 6% jump. Actually, that's more like an 8% jump. Shane Waldron spent the past 3 seasons as Seattle's offensive coordinator. He called plays for Geno Smith's improbable career year 2022. How about that? Before that stint, he held roles of a TE and QB coach and pass game coordinator for Sean McVay. As you can see above, we expect a dramatic shift in the offensive philosophy, all right? Chicago built up the wide receiver corps, all right? Corpse, I was mean to say. Keenan Allen, Romo Dunze, obviously DJ Moore, Cole Kmet, just absolutely star stud. Just got DeAndre Swift in there. It's fair to expect a rotating cast of other top performers. We'll also see if DeAndre Swift can push for another 270 touches after he signed a deal with $15.3 million guaranteed. Yeah, the passing game is being upgraded. They did not draft Caleb Williams to run the ball. No, he'll be throwing that. He'll be dropping dimes. Big change. Big change from the running days of Justin Fields, let me tell you that. Bears fans, I'd have some hope before the season until the Vikings crush all of your dreams. I doubt that'll happen. Heading down south, New Orleans Saints coaching change. Offensive coordinator Clint Kubiak is coming in, and I mean, they have a rookie running back, Kendre Miller, but who knows? Kubiak spent 2023 as the 49ers' passing game coordinator. He brings 1 year of offensive coordinator experience when he was with the Vikings in 2021. That year, we ranked 12th in yards, 14th in points, 16th in rush attempts. Yeah, pretty average. So nothing much. Nothing much. It's very underwhelming. You know, you got Chris Olave, but that's about it when it comes to the Saints. I mean, there, you know, Kendre Miller, he's 22 years old. If he stays healthy, he'll be able to eat into Alvin Kamara's rushing load. But, you know, Alvin Kamara, Chris Olave, Derek Carr, there's not much to be adored here with the Saints. So I'd steer clear of Saints players unless you're pretty confident. Moving on to a very interesting one. The Philadelphia Eagles expect the run rate to increase just a tiny bit. You know, the Eagles, they brought in offensive coordinator Kellen Moore after firing Brian Johnson after just one season. And Moore, you know, he got a head coach interview with the Chargers, and he was their offensive coordinator last season. So now, you know, going from interviewing for a head coach somewhere else to becoming the offensive coordinator, I don't know what's going on there. There might be an offensive coordinator change here, but the target distribution won't change much. AJ Brown and Devontae Smith combined for a 48% target share last season. Wow. Also, Saquon Barkley's coming in with $26 million guaranteed. He's going to have a workhorse role. The Chargers, you know, they used motion at the snap on 25% of their plays last year, which ended up being eighth in the league. Meanwhile, the Eagles were dead last at 10.9, so that could be a bit of a switch there with this new addition. If you have any Eagles players as keeper options, just be careful. Just be careful, is all I'm going to say. But Eagles are going to be good. You know, they're going to be doing more motion plays. Saquon's going to be put to work. I don't think this will impact too much. AJ Brown, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts, Saquon Barkley, take the stars, they will perform. Heading on over to the West Coast in the upper left corner of the country, Seattle Seahawks have a new head coach in Mike McDonald and a new offensive coordinator in Ryan Grubb. They had a pass rate of 61.6% last year. That's projected to drop to 59%. Very interesting here. Jackson Smith and Jigba is apparently going to be a massive piece of this offense. Of course, the star studded wide receiver. And you know, McDonald's high on him. The attacking style of offense could get Geno Smith closer to his 2022 form. Last year wasn't the best. That's when his touchdowns, adjusted completion rate, QB rating, and PFF passing grade all turned up career highs. Recall that Smith finished as the QB5 in fantasy in 2022. You know, Kenneth Walker will likely remain the feature back, but the new staff do give Zach Charbonnet a chance to earn more work. He handled 8.8 touches per game as a rookie. By the way, he wasn't even a starter. So Jackson Smith and Jigba, Geno Smith, Zach Charbonnet, Kenneth Walker, you know, just expect a slower dip, it would appear, in the passing rate because, you know, Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet are kind of coming into their own, so. We'll see there, but Jackson Smith and Jigba, I'm super high on as a wide receiver. I already drafted him. I'm rocking with him. Heading on down to Tampa Bay, we got a new offensive coordinator, Liam Cohen. Liam Cohen, and this team's going to be so similar. You know, it's hit or miss with Rashad White and Baker Mayfield. You never know. But Rashad White, number four running back last season. Who knows? Who honestly knows? Going to be a very similar team, though. Cohen was calling plays for Will Levis down back in Kentucky during his college years. And he spent 3 years with Sean McVay. I mean, is everyone with Sean McVay? Sean McVay is one of the greatest coaches of our time. Similar run-pass split for this upcoming season is the projection. They don't see Rashad White getting another opportunity. He's 20.1 per game due to Canales leaving. And that might actually hurt Baker Mayfield's chances of repeating his rebound year where he finished as the 12th QB in fantasy. Let him go undrafted, but snag up Rashad White. I'm high on Rashad White. I doubt he regresses that drastically. And if any of our guys remain consistent top 10 performers, they're a good deal in fantasy. So steer clear of the Bucks, except for Rashad White, probably, if I'm being honest. But then, you know, you got Mike Evans, who's super talented. It all comes down to what you're going to see. I don't expect too much of a change when it comes to the Buccaneers offense. Finally, here's an interesting one, which I have no idea what's going to happen. The Washington Commanders, okay? New head coach Dan Quinn. New offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury. The projection for pass rate and run rate is supposed to flip by 9% from a 66% pass rate to a 58% pass rate. Running rate from 34% to 42% run rate, okay? Klinsberg made the jump from college to pro head coach in 2019. What followed 4 unsuccessful seasons of spread you out up-tempo offense. His offense is flash, but result didn't match any offensive guru reputation. Never even broke into the top 50% of yards per play or points per game. Klingsberg spent 2023 as a senior offensive analyst for USC, but now he's back. You know, he's looking to bring the attack, as you could say. He's trying to keep a mystery of what he's going to do. Expect to see a lot more plays of shotgun looks with RPOs to maximize Jaden Daniels, the rookie QB's talent. Klingsberg has already praised Daniels' preparation and work ethic at OTAs. The backfield figures to benefit from the threat of Daniels' legs. You know, because you got Austin Eckler, Brian Robinson, they're going to be sharing time. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with a lot of these guys. But I'd ride with Austin Eckler. If anything, he's still talented. And Brian Robinson Jr., they're just not going to be the stars that they were probably the last season. I don't freaking know. But fun stuff. Fun stuff, a lot of these. Good times with all these head coaches. We'll see what happens in fantasy football and the upcoming NFL season. A lot of stuff is going to be a-changing. And I'll tell you what else is always a-changing, guys, and that is pop culture, because guess what? We're back with another top 10 new things in pop culture. Every single episode now, there's always new things to talk about in pop culture, so let's dive right on into it. The Crow, a new movie out now, starring Bill Skarsgård, recently debuted with 6% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh my goodness, wow, that is bad. It's a fresh tomato, but we want our tomatoes to be rotten when you're looking at Rotten Tomatoes. It's a remake of an old film. I don't know. I have no interest in it. I haven't really seen much PR in terms of that. But geez, 6% is not pretty. Being after what recent movie came out that had Alien Romulus was in the 90 percentile. So tough luck for The Crow. Alien Romulus dominates the box office. Number two, we now have our first official look at Harrison Ford as Red Hulk in the upcoming Captain America Brave New World, I believe it's called, film. And it's literally just Red Hulk. It's just Red Hulk. I don't know. I don't have that much anticipation over the film. After watching Deadpool Wolverine, I do not see myself laughing that hard originally for the first time at a Marvel movie. Deadpool movies are just so funny, so amazing. I don't know. Number three, the first look at Glenn Powell and Chad Powers. The series follows a college quarterback whose career ends after bad behavior, so he walks onto a struggling Southern football team disguised as the talented Chad Powers. Now, this is actually super funny, because this is based off of, I believe, Eli Manning, or it might have been Jared Goff, who, for a funny video, went and tried out at a college football, like, walk-on day under the name Chad Powers. And it's crazy. They turned that into a movie. I mean, Glenn Powell taking over, just absolutely taking over the movie scene. He's the top guy. He's the top guy right now. So best of luck to him. Interesting stuff. Coming in at number four, a John Williams documentary titled Music by John Williams, released on November 1st on Disney Plus. The doc will also have a limited theatrical release. The great John Williams, musical genius for Disney. Excited to see him. Wait one second. Sorry, guys. Yeah, rest in peace, John Williams. But here we go. Number five, I think it is. First poster for Paris Has Fallen. It'll be a TV series spinoff coming to Hulu based off of the Has Fallen franchise, you know, with Gerard Butler. London Has Fallen, Angel Has Fallen, Olympus Has Fallen. Now we have Paris Has Fallen. I'm very intrigued by that. I'm sure my mother would love that. She loved those Gerard Butler movies. It doesn't star Gerard, though. It stars two random individuals on the cover who I've never seen in my life. Very interesting. Coming in at number six, we got our first official sneak peek at Ironheart, releasing next year on Disney+. I have no interest in Ironheart. I saw her in Black Panther 2. No interest. Absolutely not. It's literally a black female Iron Man, which it feels like they're pushing that onto us. Because don't get me wrong, I don't mind black people. I don't mind females. All right. But when you're trying to replace Robert Downey Jr. with that, it just feels, you can just tell it's progressive. Okay, you can just tell it's progressive. And in the wake of Chadwick Boseman's death, they've kind of done a bad job of keeping up the legacy of Black Panther. It's such a shame we lost one of the greats. Number seven, the first poster for Bridget Jones 4 has just released. They'll be coming out February 14th on Peacock. Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy. I don't know what that is. Stars Renee Zellweger. I legit have no idea who Bridget Jones is. But, you know, now that you know, they're making a fourth Bridget Jones movie, guys. Come on, tune in. We're all going to be watching it live when it streams on Peacock. I'm excited for it. Very, very pumped. Number eight. Jenna Ortega will star in Sabrina Carpenter's next music video. Hello. Hello. How about that? Jenna Ortega, Sabrina Carpenter in the same music video. How about that? How exciting. Both of them taking over their respective games, both looking nice as they do it. Good for them. I hope that is very informative to you about the pop culture universe. Number nine, the very woke Jack Black and the not woke Paul Rudd are in talks to star in a new Anaconda movie. The film follows a group of friends facing midlife crises who decide to go to the rainforest and remake their favorite movie from their youth, Anaconda. That actually sounds interesting. I've also not seen Paul Rudd in a lot of films recently. What's been going on with that? I need some more Paul Rudd in my life, honestly. That's what I'm all about. Love me some Paul Rudd, one of my favorite actors. Jack Black, you know, I don't really like to judge someone on their political views, personal views, but he pushes the boundaries with how he views things. And number 10, Mattson Tomlin says they are now gearing up the Batman 2 to film next year. The bar just couldn't be any higher. Matt Reeves is a true artist who is operating in a world where sometimes art doesn't get to flourish. Come on, give me the Batman 2. I thought we'd be getting it by now. They haven't even started filming this year, and I'm not even going to film until next year. So we're going to just have to patiently wait to see what happens. But the Batman 2 is going to have so much hype around it. And best of luck to... Who plays Batman? Robert Pattinson? Robert something? Is it Pattinson? Pattinson? I'm so sorry. I cannot remember your name, Robert. Is it Pattinson? I don't even know, but... Batman 2 should be coming out in 2026 at this point. Who even knows? But that's your pop culture rundown. Not too much stuff, not too much fun stuff, but a little bit of TV show, a little bit of music video, a little bit of movies here and there. Always a good time. We always enjoy hearing about new things in pop culture. With that, ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to dive into our UFC Vegas 96 predictions. We, of course, have 12 fights coming at you. You know, it was originally 10, and then out of nowhere, today I saw they added freaking 2 more fights. So I was like, goodness me, I get to watch even more UFC. But I do have a fantasy draft going on. I think it's 7 on Saturday, and also be at the fair, the Minnesota State Fair, one of the biggest fairs in the country, with Lexi, of course, where me and Lexi are actually going to try and film a podcast, I believe. Gosh, so much podcasting. Honestly, I'm just busy, but I love it. Better than sitting around being bored. Let's not waste any time. Let's look at our fights, look at the odds, if you will, and drop our official predictions. Kicking off the 96th UFC Apex event, my goodness gracious, we head to the women's flyweight division as Wang Kong, my goodness, Wang, I absolutely adore your name, takes on Victoria Fury Leonardo, Wang the Joker Kong. Oh my goodness, Wang, I'm so picking you already. Wang is 5-0, Victoria Leonardo 9-6. 5'6 to 5'5 gives Wang 1 inch in reach. Oh, 1 inch in height, I mean. She is 2 inches in reach, 66 inches to 64. Wang stands in the southpaw stance, Victoria Leonardo in the orthodox fighting position. Let's kick it off with Wang the Joker Kong, who is a astounding -800 favorite. Utterly insane. Victoria Leonardo at +550 underdog. Wang Kong, 32 years old, from China, undefeated as we know. She actually holds a win over Valentina Shevchenko in kickboxing. How about that? Of her 5 MMA wins, 1 KO and 2 submissions. Most recently fought in on May 18th and submitted Paulina Lina on the road to the UFC with a little 3-minute guillotine choke. And get this, she's already fighting in the UFC. I mean, absolutely love it. Undefeated, legendary kickboxer. And I mean, just dominated Paulina Luna in that fight. Wang Kong, absolutely love your name. 32 years old, from China. Why is she fighting here when we're going to China in November? Hopefully Wang can make quick work of Victoria Leonardo and get on that China card, because we're going to Macau November 23rd, I believe it is. But anyways, Victoria Leonardo, 1-4 and 1-3 in the UFC, 34 years old, from Louisiana. Of her 9 wins, she is 9-6, 1 KO and 4 submissions. Now, of her 6 losses, she's been KO'd 4 times and submitted once, so not the prettiest amount. Won on Day One's Contender Series in 2020, then TKO'd by Manon Fiorot. couldn't continue past round two against Melissa Gatto. Won a unanimous decision in July of 2022 against Mandy Bohm. Then last time she fought, May of 2023, Natalia Silva KO'd her in 3 minutes. So Victoria Leonardo not coming in with much momentum or any momentum at all. So we're definitely riding with Wang Kong in this one. And we're even going to say a little round one submission. Because why not? We love Wang Kong. Fun name, Victoria Leonardo. I don't know how you finessed yourself into the UFC, but you're no longer going to be here. After that, we head to the men's featherweight division as we have a late addition to the card. Two guys who recently fought on the most recent season of The Ultimate Fighter. They didn't fight each other, but they were both competitors. And they're now competing in the UFC because the UFC was kind of like, all right, let's give these two a shot. We got Zygomantis Ramoska and Nathan Fletcher. Zygomantis Ramoska, amazing name. He sits at 9-2. Nathan Fletcher, 8-1. 5'11 to 5'7 gives Zygomantis 4 inches in height. He also has 1 inch in reach, 71 inches to 70. Both men are in the orthodox fighting position. Zygomantis, plus 140 underdog. Nathan Fletcher coming in as your favorite, minus 175. Not too shabby for these kids. Zygomantis, 27 years old from Lithuania, currently on a little 3-fight winning streak, 5 KOs and 4 submissions to his name when it comes to finishes of his 9 wins. So that's 100% finish rate. And of his 2 losses, he was KO'd once. So, Zygomantis coming in with a banger name, representing Lithuania. A little 3-fight winning streak. Did not win on The Ultimate Fighter, but you know what? He's here to bring the energy against Nathan Fletcher. No nickname for either of these guys. The minus 175 favorite, Nathan Fletcher, 26 years old, from England. Currently on a little 2-fight winning streak. Of his 8 wins, 1 KO and 6 submissions. His 1 loss was by KO. Interesting stuff here. I mean, I hate to base everything off the fact Zygomantis has a banger name. He also has some height, if you will. But I don't really know what happened on Dana White's Contender Series for me to give a formal opinion. And I did not watch, oh, not Dana White's Contender Series, The Ultimate Fighter. I mean, I had no interest in The Ultimate Fighter, if I'm being honest. There was no hype surrounding this upcoming season of The Ultimate Fighter. So let's actually check in real quick. Let me see if I can pull it up as quickly as I can here to see who actually won. Zygomantis won a unanimous decision, then got injured. He fractured his face and was not medically cleared. Very interesting. As for Nathan Fletcher, he lost a unanimous decision in round number one. Okay, so Zygomantis actually won. This is kind of his retribution, if you will, getting another shot. So we're going to ride with Zygomantis, Ramoska. And we're going to say decision. Actually, no, he's all finishes. We'll say round one. Actually, we'll say round two knockout. Round two knockout for Zygomantis Ramoska. Wow, what a fun freaking name you have. Moving on to the women's bantamweight division here, the most star-studded division in the UFC, obviously, wink, wink, as Jacqueline Cavalcante takes on Josiane Josie Nunez. Jacqueline Cavalcante, 6-1. Josiane Nunez, 10-2. 5'8 to 5'2 gives Jacqueline 6 inches in height. Wow. She also has 3 inches in reach, 70 to 67. Orthodox stance for Jacqueline. Southpaw for Josiane Nunez. Josiane, plus 160 underdog. Jacqueline Cavalcante, minus 190 favorite. Jacqueline Cavalcante, 26 years old from Portugal, currently on a little 4-fight win streak. Of her 6 wins, she has 3 KOs, and of her 7 wins, she has fought in actually 7 different promotions. That's right. This will be the first time she fights in the same UFC fighting promotion. Absolutely crazy. She fought on the Paris card last year in September, defeating Zara Fairn, outstriking her 126 significantly to 39. Jacqueline Cavalcante is a favorite for a reason. I mean, wasn't even finished in her 1 loss. She's bringing the energy in this one. Her opponent, Josiane Nunez, who for some reason is in UFC EA Sports 5, the video game, that makes no sense. Plus 160, 30 years old, from Brazil. Of her 10 wins, 7 KOs. Of her 2 losses, she most recently lost in March to Chelsea Chandler, and 5 years ago, I believe, lost to Talia Santos. So 3-1 in the UFC. She fooled everyone when she got a round one knockout against Bea Malake in 2021. Since then, 2 boring decisions, and Chelsea Chandler absolutely humbled her. We're going to ride with Jacqueline Cavalcante in this one. She's got the height. She's got the momentum, I feel, too. A little win streak. And Judging by how she decimated Zarafan on the feet, I don't really give Josiane Nunez much of a chance. Unless Josiane decides to grapple, which she never chooses to do. So, Jacqueline Cavalcante, women's bantamweight division, get it done. Next one, here's a fun one, guys. Here's one I'm excited for. A little lightweight action for you as Vyacheslav Slavoklaz Borshev takes on James Goku Lontop. That is right, Vyacheslav Borshev is back. 7-4-1 record as he takes on the very talented James Lontop. 6'5'11", does give James an inch in height, and he has a notable 4 inches in reach, 69-73 in favor of James. Orthodox stance for both of these men. Vyacheslav Slavoklaz, as he's called, coming in as the favorite, minus 250. James Lontop, the underdog, plus 205. Vyacheslav Borshev, where do we begin? 32 years old, born in Vogelstad, Russia, now lives and trains in California. Of his 7 wins, he has 6 KOs, and of his 4 losses, he's been submitted just once. You know, this is make or break for him. He's 3-3-1 in the UFC. Actually, he's 2-3-1. I didn't even realize that. On the Dana White's Contender Series, he had a crazy knockout over Chris Duncan, which earned him a contract. Came in, nasty knockout over Dakota Bush. Then got taken down 20 times combined against Mark Diakise and Mike Davis. Then picked up a nasty knockout win over Mahashat. Then had a fight of the night draw against Nazim Sadiqov. Came back in May of this year, got Darce choked by Chase Hooper. Got absolutely decimated by Chase Hooper, might I add. Landed 2 significant strikes. That's actually one of the most dominant performances I think I've ever seen. He got 10-7 in round number 1. Absolutely insane. So, Vyacheslav, do or die right here. He's a striker through and through and through. I have no idea. He has not really been progressing, but you never know. He can always turn it around as he takes on the underdog, James Lontop. 25 years old, James is from Peru, representing Peru. He has 7 KOs and 1 submission of his 14 wins. And of his 3 losses, he's been submitted twice. So, has got a tough chin on him, I'll give him that. Won on Dana White's Contender Series in 2023, then lost his debut in April to Chris Padilla. He got submitted in round number 1 with a rear naked chokehold. I have nothing on James, guys. I have nothing on James. I don't have much to look at. He dropped Malik Lewis twice. When last time he won in September 2023, but that submission loss to Chris Padilla was not the best. Now, this should be a striking affair, and Vyacheslav Borshev usually follows up a nasty loss with a good performance, so we are going to ride with Vyacheslav Borshev. Plus, I kind of like him, and I would much rather get this prediction wrong, because it's pretty much 50-50, and, I mean, you're minus 250 favorite. You should technically win, according to the better. So, we'll ride with Vyacheslav Borshev. We'll see what happens, but I don't know. I can't tell you what's going to happen, but I do know that Vyacheslav's going to bring the heat. After that, going up to the middleweight division, as Zachary Reese, the savage Zachary Savage Reese, takes on Jose Daniel Medina. Chicho. Jose Chicho Daniel Medina. What a freaking name, Jose Medina. Wow. Zachary, 7-1. Jose Medina, 11-3. 6'6'4", gives Reese 4 inches in height. He also has 3 inches in reach, 77 inches at 74. Switch stance for Zachary's orthodox for Jose Medina. Very interesting. Let's start with the minus 400 favorite, Zach Reese. And by the way, we share the same names. So that should tell you who I'm going to predict. 30 years old from Texas, of his 7 wins, 5 KOs, and 2 submissions. 100% finish rate. Also, in his loss, he was TKO'd. So this dude just brings the heat, brings the energy. 1-1 in the UFC. And all of his fights have ended in round number 1. 8 professional fights, they've all ended in round 1. The longest he went was in his 4th professional bout, where he went to 4 minutes and 13 seconds. Besides that, rarely leaves the 2-minute mark. Fought on Dana White's Contender Series last season, got a round 1 armbar in, 74 seconds? Then took on Cody Brundage, lost in a minute 49. Then most recently, in June, got performance of the night when he knocked out Julian Marquez in 20 seconds. That's right, Zach Reese is a quick starter. He has knockout power, he has submission ability. This guy is super, super talented. His opponent, Jose Medina, plus 300 underdog. Not the prettiest, if you ask me. 33 years old from Bolivia. Okay, representing Bolivia. We're getting a mix of so many different countries, I feel, tonight. I really enjoy this. Jose Medina from Bolivia. How many finishes does this boy have? He's got 8 KOs and 2 submissions and 1 submission loss. you know. So 10 of 11 wins by finish, not too bad. Most recently lost to Magomed Gadziruslav on the last season of Dana White's Contender Series, where he just got taken down 6 times, just amounted to nothing. You know, Jose Mania not coming in off a win. Don't actually know what he's been up to in his life, but yeah, Zachary Reese, round one submission. That's what we got. Zachary Reese, round one submission. Dude, this guy's an absolute killer. If you're going to watch any fight and not be bored, watch this Zach Reese fight. He is pure entertainment. Now, I won't lie, his first two UFC fights in front of a crowd, we'll see how he does at the Apex. I don't know. That's just one little aspect that could maybe play into Jose Mania's favor. Moving on, is this the final prelim of the night? I don't actually know. We might have either a 6-fight main card. I think it's going to be a 6-fight main card. So this will be the final prelim of the night. Is a lightweight matchup between Dennis Bazookja and Francis Marshall. This is short notice. Dennis Bazookja was supposed to take on Danny Silva. Danny Silva had to pull out. So in steps Francis Fire Marshall. Dennis the Great Bazookja, 12-4. Francis Marshall, 7-2. Both men are 5'9", 72-inch reach to 70-inch for Francis Marshall, 2 inches there. Switch stance for Dennis Bazookja, orthodox for Francis Marshall. Very interesting here. Dennis Bazookja, despite being the original participant in this contest, plus 115 underdog. Francis Marshall stepping in on short notice, minus 145. Dennis Bazookja, 12-4 record of those 12 wins, 5 KOs and 1 submission. 26 years old from New York. He has 1 KO loss of his 4 losses. Now, fought on Dana White's Contender Series once. Lost the first time, won the second time. Debuted in the UFC, took on Sean Woodson, lost. Took on Jamal Emmers in November, got knocked out in 49 seconds. Returned in March of this year, crazy performance against Conor Matthews. Knocked him out in round 3, 22 seconds in round number 3. Dennis Bazookja bringing the intensity. All right, he's the Great. He nicked himself the Great. It should be Dennis Boom Bazookja, because when he brings that knockout power, he can deliver. Now, we'll have to see how he fares against Francis Marshall. Francis Marshall, 25 years old from New Jersey. That's right, we got a little New York, New Jersey matchup here. How you doing? You know, this is going to be pretty entertaining. 1 KO and 4 submissions of his 7 victories. Of his 2 losses, he was KO'd once. Currently on a 2-fight losing streak. He went 0-2 last year. Very unfortunate. Lost a split decision to William Gomez. And most recently fought in August of 2023, getting TKO'd in round 1 by Isaac Dalgarian. I don't know how Francis Marshall is the favorite here. Dennis Bazookja, you know, he's coming in with some momentum. I also just saw him comment something on Twitter. I can't even remember what it was, but he's sticking in my mind. He's an underdog. He's from New York. Dennis Bazookja. There's not much to go off here. Very great matchmaking. Might I add, the UFC does an amazing job at times matchmaking. They outdid themselves here. Very interested to see how this one goes. But I'm going to ride with Dennis Bazookja by knockout. You know, we'll even say round 1, catch everyone off guard. So let's recap our prelim predictions. Oh, by the way, we're sitting at 208 and 132 on the year. 208 correct predictions, 132. So we're up a lot. Wang Kong over Victoria Leonardo, round 1 submission. Zygmantas Romasko over Nathan Fletcher by decision. Jacqueline Cavalcante over Josiane Nunez by decision. Vyacheslav Borshev over James Lontop by round 2 knockout. Zachary Reese over Jose Medina by round 1 sub. And Dennis Bazookja over Francis Marshall by round 1 knockout. Exciting stuff. Alrighty, gang. Let's get into the main card. We're only halfway through our fights, all right? How exciting. And we're back in the middleweight division as Edmund the Golden Boy Shahbazyan takes on Gerald GM3 Meerschaert, baby. Edmund Shahbazyan, the favorite in this one, minus 300, 13-4 record, takes on the plus 240 underdog. 36-17 record to his name, Gerald Meerschaert. 6'3 to 6'1 gives Edmund 2 inches in height. 2 inches in reach, though, goes to Gerald, 77 to 75. Southpaw with that left hand for Gerald. Orthodox with the right for Edmund Shahbazyan. Let's start with the Golden Boy, the favorite, minus 300. Seems a little high, if you're asking me. I don't personally, you know, think he's warranted of that. But Edmund Shahbazyan, 26 years old from Las Vegas. Of those 13 wins, 11 KOs and 1 submission. Very impressive stuff there. Now, of his 4 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times, which isn't the prettiest, most of them by TKO. But hey, it happens. It happens, Edmund. Edmund came in the UFC, a young lad, 20 years old, won on Dana White's Contender Series with a 40-second knockout. Came in, won when he was 20 years old, crazy. He was sitting undefeated, 12-0, and then got fed to Derek Brunson. All right, TKO'd in round 3. Then I had to take on Jack Hermanson, somehow survived to the decision. Then I had to take on Nazanimov, TKO in round two. Rebounded with a knockout of Dulce Luciambula in 2022. Fought once it last year against Anthony Hernandez, TKO'd in round number three, but bounced back this March with a round one knockout of AJ Dobson. Had some moments where he was getting rocked, but he hung in there, dropped him, finished him. Edmund the Golden Boy Shabazzian is back. And by the way, his knockout of Brad Tavares at UFC 244 from 5 years ago, one of the best head kick knockouts I've ever seen. So nasty. And he's coming in with some momentum against AJ Dobson. You know, this man is a striker through and through, can land a takedown when he needs to, but prefers to fight with his hands, if you will. Like I said, 11 knockouts of 13 wins should speak for itself. Complete different tale of who he's fighting, guys. The plus 240 underdog, Jeremy Rashard, 36 years old, 10-year age gap from Milwaukee. Of his 36 wins, he has 34 finishes, 6 knockouts, 28 submissions. Utterly insane. Of his 17 losses, he has been finished 12 times, 4 by KO, 8 by sub. This dude barely goes the distance. It's just absolutely crazy. 53 professional bouts to his name. Wow. 53 professional bouts to his name. Unreal. Gerald been with the UFC since 2016. I mean, he has, 10 submissions in the UFC, I think. Even more finishes. He has fought in the likes of Thiago Santos, Jack Hermanson, Kevin Holland, Eric Anders, Khamzat Chimaev. Most recently, in 2021, he went 3-0 with all of them rear naked chokehold submissions. Then would lose a decision to Christoph Jocko in 2022. Would bounce back midway through 2022, finishing Bruno Silva. Would then unfortunately have to take on Joe Pyfer and get knocked out last year. Lost a split decision to Andre Petroski. Bounced back, though. March of this year, submitted Brian Barberina in round number two. And now GM3 is back in the mix. And I'm so torn on this fight. I'm really so torn. Like, I want you all to know this is going to go one of two ways. Either Edmund finishes him on the feet early, or Gerald takes him into deep waters and submits him. Now, when I look at the guys who have knocked out Jeremy Rashard, okay, 2020 is as far back as we'll go. Ian Heinisch knocked him out, and Khamzat Chimaev knocked him out, okay. Joe Pyfer delivers that power. I don't know if Edmund Shabazzian really delivers that power, if I'm being honest. I don't know if Edmund Shabazzian is really bringing that power, and... You know, in terms of takedown defense, you know, Edmund comes in at 63%, which is actually pretty freaking good if you ask me. But honestly, he doesn't even have to go to the ground for Gerald to take advantage. This is so 50-50 and honestly hurts me to choose here. Gerald hasn't won multiple back-to-back matchups since 2021. Ooh, I don't even know, guys. Edmund, you know, struggles against grapplers. It's been plain to see. Derek Brunson, Jack Hermanson, Anthony Hernandez. Oh, man, this one's tricky. This one is tricky. I don't know if Edmund can pull this one out, but I have to pick someone, and I do it live on air. I do all my predictions live on air, so you can feel my emotions as I read out all this stuff about them. Do we think Gerald cashes as a plus 240? He might. I rock with Edmund, man. Love Edmund Shabazzian. But, I don't know. I don't freaking know. We're going to go with Edmund Shabazzian. He's got the striking. He's younger. It's 250-50, and I just have a feeling that Edmund might knock him out. Who knows? We'll say Edmund by round two knockout. I don't know what's going to happen. Here's another instance of two guys on different spectrums of their careers, all right? Neil Magny, the Haitian sensation, 29-12 record, okay? Takes on Michael Morales, 16-0. 6'3 to 6 foot, gives Neil 3 inches in height. Also has a singular inch in reach, 80 to 79. Both men stay in the orthodox fighting position. This one, Gatekeeper Nation here. Okay, Michael Morales, -650 favorite. Holy cow. 25 years old, born in Ecuador, now lives and trains in Mexico. Of his 16 wins, 11 knockouts and one submission. And also 4-0 in the UFC with 2 knockouts. Most recently beat Jake Matthews in November of 2023. I mean, this dude is so talented. I mean, what other 25-year-old, is walking around here 16-0? All right, he's incredibly talented. Already has Trevin Giles, Max Griffin, and Jake Matthews. His name's under his record. But here's where the challenge comes. He's taking on the ultimate gatekeeper and Neil Magny. Neil Magny is the ultimate gatekeeper, plus 450 underdog, 37 years old from Illinois. Of his 29 wins, only 12 finishes, 8 KOs and 4 subs, which is pretty funny. He just got knockouts last time around. Of his 12 losses, he has been KO'd twice and submitted 6 times. So Neil Magny, been with the UFC long time now, 2013. This is year 11 for him, and I mean, Tim Means, Damian Maya, Kelvin Gastelum, Hector Lombard, a lot of notable names here. Lawrence Larkin, Johnny Hendricks, Rafael Dos Anjos, Carlos Condit, Santiago Ponzinibbio, Li Jingliang, Anthony Rocamart, and Robbie Lawler. But it wasn't until 2021 he truly became the ultimate gatekeeper, right? This man beat Jeff Neal and Max Triffin back-to-back fights. Then gets submitted by Shafkat Rakhmonov. Follows it up, getting a darce choke of Daniel Rodriguez. Then loses to Gilbert Burns. Then beats Phil Rowe. I thought Phil Rowe won that, but still it was close. Then Ian Machaugary absolutely destroyed him. But he came back January, took on Mike Mallett, a fellow basically undefeated prospect. Shockingly TKO'd him with 15 seconds left in a fight Mike was clearly winning. This is the gatekeeper final boss. He rivals Anthony Smith. You have to be legit to beat Neil Magny. And as we look at the men to beat him since 2020, you know, Michael Chiesa, we'll let him slide, okay? But Shavkat, top five guy now. Gilbert Burns, top five guy. Ian Machaugary, top five guy, okay? You need to be good to beat Neil Magny, and I do believe Michael Morales possesses these skills, the distance boxing, the takedown defense. I just think even the knockout power, I think Michael Morales may be Neil Magny's kryptonite, but at the same time, this is MMA. Weird things happen all the time. Do not be surprised if Neil Magny wins. But we're riding with the minus 650 favorite, Michael Morales. She has the same name with the Spider-Man guy from the Spider-Verse. So, hey, maybe he's got some special abilities. With that, we get into our next two matchups, which are our Ultimate Fighter finales. First off, we go to the men's featherweight division. Here we are. Khan Genghis Ofli takes on Myron the Legend Santos. Wow. 12-2-1 record for Khan Ofli. Myron Santos, 14-1. Both men are 5'7". A notable 6-inch reach for Myron Santos, 72 inches to 66. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. How distinguished. Khan Ofli, plus 155. Myron Santos, minus 200. Let's kick it off with Khan Ofli. Khan Ofli, I mean, you know, 31 years old from Melbourne, now lives and trains in Turkey. 8-fight winning streak for the guy. Wow. Oh, wow. Very impressive. Of his 12 victories, 2 KOs and 5 submissions, and of his 2 losses, he's never been finished. Very cool. On the Ultimate Fighter this past season, won a unanimous decision over Nathan Fletcher, who fights earlier, and then submitted Rode Rhodes in the semifinals in round number 1. So he's coming in. A little round 1 submission momentum, which we love to see. I freaking find that stuff so dope. And dude, I absolutely love him. Absolutely love this guy, Khan Ofli, representing Turkey. Cool guy. Very, very cool guy. But he's not the favorite. He's oddly not the favorite as he takes on the legend, Myron Santos. Myron Santos, minus 200. He's your favorite for this fight. 24 years old. He was born in 2000. 14-1 record from Brazil. 7 KOs of those 14 wins. His one loss was by KO. And he's coming off of some wins. One on Dana White's Contender Series. Beat Edwin Cooper Jr. by split decision. Then beat Guillermo Torres by unanimous decision. He was actually supposed to fight Zygomantis Romaska. But of course, he fractured his face as we discussed earlier. So now you get Khan Ofli. Now you get Myron Santos. Funny enough, I believe they are both from Team Alexa Grasso, which is pretty comical. So Team Alexa Grasso was the star-studded team this year, getting it all done. So good for her, getting her both for guys in there, if you will. Now, when it comes to who I'm going to predict, this one's a bit tricky. This one's very tricky because both guys are very talented, if you ask me. But for some reason, Khan Ofli is speaking to me. He's the underdog. He's from Turkey on a little win streak. But then you got Myron, you know, 24 years old, the ideal winner of the Ultimate Fighter. But then I look at some of our past Ultimate Fighter winners, you know. Brian Battle, which was a very good win. Mohamed Usman, which at the time we thought was going to be a good win. The women's seasons never really amounted to anything. I'm trying to think who else won the Ricky Tercios. Gosh, nothing came of him. Brady Heistead, the backup, had more success. Oh, gosh, I'm having trouble even remembering. But You know, it's rare you see a young gun really get it done. And as much as Byron Santos might have the advantage in this one, something's telling me Con Offley is going to get this one done. Despite being at a reach disadvantage, despite being the older fighter, his nickname's Genghis. We do love a little Genghis Kong around here. So, we're going to ride with Con Offley. Might be an upset. Who knows? But, you know, all the odds stacked against him. Let's ride with him. After that, let's get to our middleweight Ultimate Fighter finale. And this one promises to bring electricity to the octagon as Robert Robzilla Valentine takes on Ryan Man of Steel Loader. Great nicknames, boys. Great nicknames. Robert Valentine, 11-3 with one no contest. Ryan Loader, 7-1. Both men are 6'2". 77-inch reach to 76 gives Robert 1-inch in reach. Orthodox stands for Robert. Southpaw for Ryan Loader. Ryan Loader coming in at plus 150, the underdog for this matchup. He is the underdog. Wow. He's 33 years old from California. Currently on a little 2-fight win streak professionally. Of his 7 wins, 4 KOs. And before that, his only loss is a split decision. So, not too shabby if you ask me. So far, Ryan Loader picked up a round one submission over Tom Theocharis on the quarterfinals and then beat Omran Shaban in the semifinals to get to the spot. So, good stuff for Ryan Loader, the only man repping Team Valentina Shevchenko to make it to the finale. And by the way, of the 8 semifinalists, there were only 2 from Valentina Shevchenko's team. So Valentina Shevchenko not bringing much momentum into this one. But Ryan Loader, Man of Steel, cool nickname. Unfortunately, you're matched up with an absolute freaking killer in Robert Valentine. He is the minus 180 favorite, 29 years old, from Switzerland, on a 4-fight winning streak. Of his 11 wins, 3 KOs and 6 submissions. Of his 3 losses, 1 KO and 1 sub. Dude, this guy is live by the sword, die by the sword. Unreal. First fight, TKO's Giannis Bachar in round number 1. Semifinals fight, submits Paddy McCrory in round number 1. I mean, this freaking guy. He's got the tattoos on him. Looks like he's an old Viking, all right? He's got the hair for it, too. I mean, Robert Valentine has the look. He has the finishing ability. And in all reality, you know, professionally, 4-fight win streak, technically a 6-fight win streak if we add in his wins on Dana White's The Ultimate Fighter. So this one's going to Robert Valentine. I'm less torn on this one. Now, Ryan Loader could absolutely surprise me, but Robert Valentine, a bit younger, rep in Switzerland, finishing ability. That's all the attributes I look for when I'm looking to predict who I think will win a matchup. But should be fun. And hopefully, you know, we actually get someone who wins the Ultimate Fighter and goes on to have success in the UFC, because it's been kind of rough the past few seasons. After that, guys, we get into our co-main event for the evening. We finally get around to it, our co-main event, and we head to the women's strawweight division for this one, as the number 9-ranked Angela Hill will defend her spot against the number 11th-ranked Tabitha Ritchie. Ooh, a little fun matchup here. Angela Overkill Hill coming in at minus 115. Tabitha Baby Shark Richie coming in at minus 105. Ooh, fun nicknames. Angela Hill, exactly 30 professional bouts. Wow, 17-13 record to beat Tabitha Richie. Way less, 10-2 professional record for her. 5'3 to 5'1 gives Angela 2 inches in height. She also has 3 inches in reach, 64 inches, 61. Both women are in the orthodox fighting position. Also, Angela has 10 years of age on her. Very wow. Let's check in with the number 9-ranked woman strawweight, Angela Hill, and similar to Neil Magny, the ultimate gatekeeper. 39 years old from New York. Of her 17 wins, only 6 finishes, 5 KOs and 1 sub. Of her 13 losses, though, only been finished twice, two submission losses. And all the rest of her fights, 11-11, perfect on decision wins and losses. Angela Hill, though, I mean, had never had a submission win of her career. We predicted it last time, and May 18th, 2024, UFC Vegas, it might have been 94, I think it is, or 92, round 2 guillotine choke over Liliana Pinheiro. It was absolutely crazy. And I mean, Angela Hill is one of my favorite female fighters. Been with the UFC for 10 years now, since 2014. And the names just that she's fought. I mean, Tisha Pennington, Rose Namajunas, Jessica Andrade, Nina Nunes, Marina Moroz, Randa Markos, Yan Chayonin, Claudia Gadella, Michelle Warson Gomez. I mean, Amanda Lemos, Mira Jandiroba. They have just kept coming. And 4-1 in her last 5 fights. Wins over Lupi Godinez, Emily Ducote, Denise Gomez, and Luana Pinheiro. Her only loss, a fight of the night to Mackenzie Dern, which went all 5 rounds. So, Angela Hill coming in, officially a 2-fight win streak. We got the first submission win of her career. Just all the momentum in the world. One of the only women you're going to see that has multiple fight of the night bonuses in the last 4 years. She is super, super entertaining. Her opponent, though, nickname is Baby Shark, and she's coming to eat it up. Tabitha Ritchie, 29 years old, born in Brazil, but now lives and trains in California. Of her 10 wins, 1 KO, and 3 submissions. Of her 2 losses, she was KO'd once. That was actually by Amanda Fiore in her debut in 2021. Since then, going 5-1 in the UFC, was on a little 4-fight winning streak, including a big win over Jillian Robertson in June of 2023, for losing a split decision to Lupe Godinez in November. Bounce back in May. Split decision went over Tisha Pennington. You know, Tabitha, I mean, you got an armbar over Jessica Penne in March of last year. But other than that, Angela Hill, I think, possesses more killer aspect. And if I'm picking the gatekeeper Neil Magny to lose, I can't pick both gatekeepers to lose. So we're actually going to ride with Angela Hill. Like I said, it's women's MMA. Tabitha Ritchie could easily get it done, but I like Angela Hill. I find her entertaining. I find her to be a good fighter. And we'll see how she does. But that's who we're riding with. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our main event of the evening. And it's a good one. I'm tuning in for this. I don't care where I'm at. I'll be throwing it up on my phone, on my TV. But the number 5 ranked middleweight contender, the former title challenger, Jerry Cannonier, defends his spot against the number 12 ranked Caio Barralo. Oh my goodness. This one's going to be fireworks. Jerry Cannonier, the killer gorilla, takes on the natural Caio Barralo. 17-7 record for the killer gorilla. 16-1 with 1-0 contest for the natural. 6-1, the 5'11 gives Caio 2 inches in height, but Jared has the reach advantage, 77 inches to 75. Switch stance for Jared, southpaw for Caio Barralo. Jared actually checking in this one as the underdog, plus 170. The odds keep flipping, though. I mean, his odds have been all over the place. No idea where to even begin with that. 40 years old from Alaska. Of his 17 wins, he has 10 wins by knockout and 2 wins by submission. Not too bad for Jared Cannonier. Of those 17 victories, 7 of them have ended in round number 1. Now, of his 7 losses, he has been KO'd 3 times, so that's his only real weakness, honestly. And Jared Cannonier, been with the UFC a while, since 2015. This is year 9 for him. The only fighter to fight in the heavyweight division, light heavyweight division, and the middleweight division. Alex Pereira could probably do that, too. And I mean, this dude's fought in everyone. He also has knockout wins at all 3 of those weight classes. Wins over, I mean, he's fought in Ian Kudalabe, Glover Teixeira, Jan Blachowicz, Dominic Reyes, Anderson Silva. He owns a win over Jack Hermanson. He's fought in Robert Whittaker, Adesanya, Derek Brunson. As of late, you know, beat Sean Strickland in December 2022, beat Marvin Vettori, set the middleweight significant strike record in June of 2023, but came back in June to take on Nazanin Imavov, and just his age was showing. He looked like a 40-year-old fighter. And, you know, was the stoppage early? Yes. You know, his fight versus Nazanin Imavov was stopped prematurely, but I made the mistake of not picking Nazanin Imavov. I rode with Jared Cannonier, and he just didn't look there. You know, he just didn't look there. He looked outclassed by the younger fighter, and I think that's exactly what you're going to get here with Caio Barralo. Caio, the natural Barralo. So talented. So talented. This is a gifted athlete right here, okay? 31 years old, the minus 205 favorite. From Brazil, he actually is at the Fighting Nerds, all right? The Fighting Nerds, one of the hottest gyms right now. They got Gene Silva there. They got Mauricio Rufi. They also have one more person there who is evading me. He just fought. It's not Gene Silva. Someone else. I think he fought at UFC 305, it might have been. Yeah, it was at UFC 305. Who was it, gang? Stick with me, Carlos Protas. That's who it is. I mean, that gym is just undisputedly taken over the scene. And Caio Barralo, currently their leader. Oh, my goodness. Of his 16 wins, 13 finishes. Oh, my goodness. Absolutely crazy. On a 15-fight win streak, dude is just ridiculous. Dude is absolutely ridiculous, okay? One loss by decision. His one loss is by decision. And hasn't lost in, goodness me, like 5 or 6 years or something. It's been actually crazy. It might even be longer than that. But had to find David's contender series twice. Second time on, got a 2-minute knockout. Proved he belonged. Since then, 6-0 in the UFC. Finished Michael Okojacek. And most recently, finished Paul Craig at UFC 301 in May. Round 2 knockout, got performance bonus for it. Kyle's coming in with all the momentum in the world. Yeah, we're picking Caio Barralo all day. All day we're picking Kyle Brawl, and I'm even going to hit him with a little round three submission. That's what I think is going to happen. Kyle Brawl is going to go out there, take him down, and submit Jared Cannonier. Should be fireworks, should be exciting, but I am pumped. I'm very pumped to see Kyle Brawl get this one done. I have the utmost faith in him that he'll now become the number five middleweight in the world, but I do throw in the butt. Middleweight's a tough one to break into. Middleweight's a very tough one to break into. I mean, look at the top guys. Sean Strickland, Adesanya, Whitaker, Nazarbayev, Jared Cannonier, Marvin Vettori. Okay? Nazarbayev was able to break in. Other than that, a lot of guys have been turned back. So, I think Jared, unfortunately, loses to Kyle Brawl, but hey, you know what? Maybe he turns back the clock. Maybe he dials it up. But I think Brawl has got this one in the bag. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude episode 113 of the Surprise Jab Podcast. Hope you enjoyed your UFC Vegas 96 predictions. A little look at some head coaching changes that could affect fantasy football players. A little pop culture and UFC news. A little bit of talking about senior year now. It's coming to an end. A lot of fun stuff. So I'll catch you guys next time. We got so many. We might have two surprise guests next week. It might be a four-episode week. What do I know? We got big things planned for this thing. We're trying to take this podcast from level zero to level 100. And as always, guys, make sure to check out all my social media. I mean, I should start plugging that, all right? Check out my TikTok. Check out my YouTube. Check out my Instagrams, the Facebooks. I mean, literally every freaking app we are on. The link is always in the bio for all of those. And as always, I will catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.